2 days away from the Sunday portion of the Week 10 schedule. The Thursday portion already has unfolded. Washington losing at Minnesota, but the biggest off-field issue continued to percolate. Even during the Thursday night game, a statement released from David Cornwell, who has been hired to advise Jonathan Martin, and possibly more than advise Jonathan Martin, in connection with the events that transpired and continue to transpire between Martin and the Dolphins. That statement that came out last night was as strong of a statement as I can ever recall seeing. And as I explained earlier today at ProFootballTalk.com, I believe that the message here, the between the lines, or maybe not even between the lines, indication to the team is just go ahead and cut this guy. Now, before the Dolphins would cut him, I think the Dolphins would want some type of a firm assurance that cutting Martin wouldn't be viewed as some sort of retaliation, that Martin would want out. And when you consider what was said by various players on Wednesday in the locker room, you get the impression that Martin doesn't believe he'll be able to go back there. And I don't think anybody believes Martin will be able to go back there, right, wrong, or otherwise. Martin and the Dolphins locker room for at least the balance of the season doesn't mix. So why not go ahead and blow up the bridge like Cornwell does in this statement? Now, maybe the Dolphins realize the only alternative is keep paying him to not work or get rid of him and have someone else pick up his salary for the rest of the year. And frankly, because Martin doesn't have 4 years of service, if he gets cut, he's not entitled to anything more other than what else would be guaranteed in his contract. They need to pull up his contract and see what's left. He was drafted late enough, I believe, that he wouldn't have guaranteed salaries. And even if he did, they'd be minimum salaries. And even if they are guaranteed, I think the chances are if he gets cut, someone's going to claim him on waivers. Because whether it's the 49ers and his former Stanford coach, Jim Harbaugh, the Colts and his former Stanford offensive coordinator, Pep Hamilton, and former quarterback, by the way, Andrew Luck, or just an owner who wants to appear progressive at a time when the NFL is trying to change a culture in the locker room, I think someone else is going to give Jonathan Martin a chance if he would be released. But that's the big takeaway that I have from the Cornwell statement. Once we get past the shock and the quote that's attributed to an unnamed teammate, no names named, and I think part of the message of this statement was, hey, Dolphins players who are making it clear you don't want Jonathan Martin in the locker room, back off or we're going to start attaching names to some of these other allegations that have yet to have a name attached to them. But the other message is, with Jonathan Martin intent on cooperating with the NFL's investigation, he'll name names behind closed doors. And some folks are going to have a real problem. The Dolphins continue to have an issue. And I thought the Dolphins would maybe rally around each other like the Patriots did after Spygate. This one's too much. This one's too big. There's too many distractions. You've got the ongoing investigation. You've got the daily developments, almost hourly developments, and really there haven't been any developments since last night, which means that maybe there is just another development around the corner. For the Vikings, the big development last night was they won a football game. They moved to 2-7. And, you know, it wasn't pretty, and you have to consider the opposition. And, you know, Christian Ponder got injured. Who knows when he'll be back? So maybe it's going to be more Matt Cassel. Maybe it's going to be more or any Josh Freeman. But the Vikings got it done. They came from behind. They moved to 2-7. But now you have to ask yourself, okay, 2 years after they were 3-13, which came 27 years after the last time they were 3-13, those are the two worst seasons in team history, can they even get to three wins? Let's consider the schedule that's coming up for the Minnesota Vikings the rest of the way. How many wins do we see on the horizon? At Seattle? Yeah. At Green Bay? Eh. Well, now look, it may be that they get a chance to beat Seneca Wallace, so maybe that one's winnable. Bears come to town? Good luck with that. They go to Baltimore? Good luck with that. Eagles come to town? Eagles are still going to be chasing a division title by week 15. Not an easy win by any stretch. Not even a likely win. That's a possible win. At Bengals? Bengals unbeaten at home this year in the playoff race. And then finally, the Lions, who may need a win to get in to the postseason. There's nothing that jumps off that screen that tells me there's a win lurking. Vikings could still be destined for 2-14, and this brings back the time-honored debate. At this point, wouldn't it be better for the Vikings? And I'm not saying anybody should tank, will tank, could tank, but let's view it in the bigger picture here. Wouldn't it be better for the Vikings, who have no chance of making it to the postseason, to not win another game? Because then they're in better position to get what they so desperately need and so clearly don't have, a franchise quarterback. Now, again, Coach Leslie Frazier, it's not in his interest. He's going to get fired if the Vikings don't win another game, and he may get fired anyway. GM Rick Spielman, if the wheels come off, maybe he doesn't come back. So it's going to be somebody else who would be using that higher pick in the draft. But big picture, long term, if the Vikings have no chance of making it to the playoffs, and when you look at that schedule, they've got no chance of making it to the playoffs, you're better off finishing as high as you can in the draft order, because the importance of getting a franchise quarterback gets greater and greater every year. Only way to get one. You're not going to get one on the street after he's cut by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They found that out. The only way you're going to get one is to draft one, and they swung and they missed on Christian Ponder. Time to get the bat and swing again, and the higher they are in the batting order, the more likely they'll get their franchise quarterback. And for Washington, which has a franchise quarterback, second straight year at 3-6. Last year, they turned it around. They won the division. This year, if they don't, the fact they did it last year becomes even more glaring. Mike Shanahan's bouncing back and forth on and off the hot seat list. He's going to be on the hot seat list, I predict, for next week, because if they don't make it to the playoffs, I think that Mike Shanahan is going to be gone, and they're going to hire a coach that they think will be better able to get the most out of Robert Griffin III, but also control him and kind of take away the idea that he's the face of the franchise, because this model isn't working this year, and it really wasn't working last year until they woke up late in the season. The model in Green Bay that probably won't work very well is their backup quarterback plan, which consists of hoping and praying that Aaron Rodgers doesn't get hurt. And when it appeared that the Packers would stand pat with Seneca Wallace and Scott Tolzien, in comes the news that they are going to work out Matt Flynn. Now, supposedly Matt Flynn has a dead arm. Why bring him in to work him out? I think the Packers realize that they've bungled this backup quarterback plan. So before they just say, we don't want Matt Flynn, there's a PR element at play here. They know they need to bring in Matt Flynn and kick the tires on Matt Flynn and say, okay, we looked at Matt Flynn, now we don't want Matt Flynn. Because there's a chance this all falls apart for the Green Bay Packers. And for all the good things Ted Thompson has done, and I hate that this is anti-Ted Thompson week, but how in a world where franchise quarterback is such a critical aspect of the game do you not have a backup plan? We have Seneca Wallace. We believe in Seneca Wallace. Now Sean King believes in Seneca Wallace. Look, Seneca Wallace was available in September for a reason. What you need is a guy you've drafted, who knows your system, who you're grooming, and who is ready to step in seamlessly to play without the worry. And I know there's still going to be a drop-off, but when you look at what the Packers have in place, consider the Patriots, they had Ryan Mallett. You consider the Broncos, they have Brock Osweiler. The Redskins, they've got Kirk Cousins. And I think the good rule of thumb is a team with a franchise quarterback has a decent backup plan if we instantly know who the backup is. Who's the Lions quarterback? Think fast. Backup. You got to think about it for a few seconds. I'd even have to look it up to be 100% sure. Lions don't have a good backup plan. That's a pretty loose rule of thumb. Drew Brees, who's his backup? Do you know quickly? I'd have to think about it. I think it's Luke McCown. I'd have to look it up. I think these teams that don't have names that we instantly know at backup quarterback, they may be flirting with disaster, and disaster may have arrived for the Green Bay Packers, who take on the Philadelphia Eagles, who can't win a game at home. They're 0-4 this year, but they do very well on the road. They are 4-1. One team that has to go on the road this weekend to play a team much better than the teams they've been beating. Carolina Panthers go to San Francisco to face a rested 49ers team coming off of a bye. Are the Panthers ready for the challenge? We'll find out after the break. Greg Olsen, Panthers tight end, will join us. I'll ask him about how this late season bye, both for the 49ers getting ready to play the Panthers this week, the Patriots getting ready to play the Panthers next week, how does that affect things? And I know that I'm going to ask that because I already did ask it. We taped it yesterday afternoon, full disclosure, and yes, I wore the same shirt. I don't know why, because I knew I was going to tell you that I taped the interview, but still, I'll have the same shirt on. It is clean. And if it smells, you can't smell it anyway. Greg Olsen after the break, and then we'll wrap things up by talking to you. It's PFT Planet Day. It's Friday. We've got some Twitter questions. Boy, that's a lame fight song. It's hard to talk over. Anyway, no more talking after the break. We'll be back. This is PFT Life. We'll be right back. Moving right along on this Friday edition of PFT Live, getting ready for week 10 of the NFL season. And our next guest is getting ready for a key game in San Francisco against the 49ers. He's the starting tight end for the red hot Carolina Panthers. 4 wins in a row, 5-3 record. Greg Olson joins us now. Greg, congratulations on the success this year. Welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on.
What do you think the biggest reason is for this 4-game winning streak we've seen from the Carolina Panthers?
You know, I finally feel like we've started to put it all together. I think at times, you know, both earlier this year and in the past, you know, either different parts of our offense would play well or different aspects of the game would go well. You know, offense would play well, defense wouldn't. Defense, most of the time the defense has been playing awesome and the offense kind of let us down. So I think, you know, we've put it all together. We've been pretty good with the, you know, keeping track of the ball, not turning the ball over, not putting our defense in bad spots. When we can give our defense, you know, we can pin people back and make teams go the length of the field in our defense. For the most part, we can get the ball back, use the field position game, you know, guy like Ted. So I think there's, you know, a lot of factors that have gone on to, you know, to us winning some games. And I think for the most part, it's just consistency and playing a little better.
Which side of the ball, Greg, do you think has improved more this year, offense or defense?
You know, I would have to say offense. I think from pretty much from the jump, the defense has been playing pretty consistently, you know, pretty consistently well from the first game on. You know, I think the offense has played well at times. You know, I think the consistency factor, like we said, is kind of the biggest difference these last couple weeks. You know, sustaining drives, you know, and then our, you know, when we get down in the red zone, scoring touchdowns, not settling for field goals, you know, taking care of the ball, you know, all those key important things come together. And these last couple weeks, I think we've done a better job with that.
And there were concerns about the offense this year, given the departure of Rob Chudzinski to Cleveland. He's the head coach there now. Mike Shula stepped in as the offensive coordinator. What's been your assessment of how Shula has done in his first year after Chudzinski?
I think he's done a great job. I think he's put his stamp and his mark on this team, both with some different changes we made in the offseason, as you know, as far as, you know, verbiage and the way we call certain personnel groups and plays. And then also just, you know, every coordinator has their own, you know, feel and for the game and their own way of doing things. I think we've done a nice job being balanced. I think, crazy enough, after 8 games, I think we have the same amount of runs to pass, I think, exact. You know, I think that's hard, you know, hard to do in the NFL. And we've stayed patient with the run game. And then later on in games, it's really helped us. So, you know, I think he's done a great job, you know, stepping in, keeping the consistency with we've had the last couple of years as far as the system we were in, and but also at the same time building off of it.
You had 4 years in Chicago before joining the Panthers, and the last team you played for in Chicago made it to the NFC title game, hosted that game. Do you see anything in this Panthers team that tells you this could be a team that gets to the postseason and maybe makes some noise there?
It does. You know, those years, that year in Chicago, our defense was playing, you know, lights out. You know, very similar to we are now. We were playing very, you know, efficient. You know, we were holding the ball, but at the same time putting up a lot of points, very similar to like we did back in 2010 when I was in Chicago. So it does. It reminds me of a lot. We got into a similar, I think, 6-game win streak there that year that really propelled us to get that number 2 seed. So, you know, it does. It reminds me a lot of that year. And you know, now as we enter the second half of the season and really into the meat of our schedule, we're going to have to just keep this momentum going and keep playing, because each week, you know, as you win, it gets harder and harder each week to continue to win in this league. So, you know, when you win 4, winning 5 is that much harder. So, we got our work cut out for us, but, you know, I think we have as good a chance as anybody.
What do you say to those who would point out that the Panthers really haven't beaten anyone this year? 5 wins come against teams with a combined record of 8-33, and the thinking is, well, okay, get back to us when you actually beat a good team. What's the reaction when there's that kind of talk out there?
You know, it's the same people probably who, you know, beginning of the season, I think we were ranked the hardest schedule in the league and we didn't stand a chance and the Panthers were going nowhere. And now all of a sudden we're 5-3 and our schedule all of a sudden has gone from the hardest to the easiest. You know, I just think people are always going to look for things to knock on why you can't do well. We don't get too wrapped up in that. We play when these schedules came out. You know, these games haven't changed. We play whoever's next on our schedule. And, you know, that we don't get too wrapped up in a lot of that, you know, outside the building.
The next team on the schedule, the San Francisco 49ers, when you look at that defense, what is the biggest concern you get as it relates to what you do as a tight end in that offense?
You know, they're obviously extremely talented. You know, you look across the board, they got, you know, Pro Bowl caliber players almost at every single position. You know, it starts with their front 7 guys. You know, their linebacking core is as good as there is. their down guys. You know, getting Alden Smith back obviously is huge for them. You know, so they present some matchups there in the front seven that we really have to be, you know, keened in on. And then in the back secondary, they have good guys. You know, Whitner's a really good safety. They drafted the rookie from LSU, who's playing well. You know, they move Patrick Willis around on tight ends a lot. He seems to be the linebacker that they like most in coverage. And, you know, we obviously know how good of a player he is. So it's going to be a good challenge for us. I think guys are excited to go out there and, you know, play arguably one of the top, you know, defenses in the league these last couple of years, especially now that they have all their parts back. So it's exciting, you know, to play in these meaningful games this late in the season is not something, unfortunately, that's, you know, been very common around here for the last couple of years. And I think guys are excited to, you know, in week 10 to, you know, to play this kind of game and with, you know, with put some stuff on the line.
And you get the 49ers in week 10 after they had week 9 off. And then week 11, Monday night, you get the Patriots after they've had week 10 off. Two straight opponents with 2 weeks to get ready for you. Does that matter? Is that a factor? Does it make it easier for them to prepare to face you when they have 2 weeks?
You know, I think this late in the season, I think more so just the recovery aspect of those bye weeks. You know, we had our bye week in, you know, week 4, and I think with the new rules, if guys, you can only practice, you know, 2 days and give, you know, you have to have 4 days off. I don't think you get much more practice time, but I think towards the end of the season, the teams that have those byes have the benefit of, you know, getting some injured guys back, you know, getting some guys that may be dinged up but are good enough to play but have kind of been dinged up for a couple of weeks, get them back a little closer to full speed for the, you know, late season push. So I'd say more so physically rather than, you know, I don't think they're going to put in any top secret plays that they wouldn't have gotten with only one week of practice, but more so the physical aspect.
And I think back to your early season, you had that huge win, 38-0 over the Giants, and then you go into a bye, probably at a time that you would have preferred to keep playing after that
right.
big win.
Yeah.
And then
right.
out of the bye, it's the Cardinals. What, when you think back to the fact that you guys have won the last 4 games, and before that was that clunker in Arizona, have you been able to make any sense of what happened that day in Arizona?
Yeah, I mean, we went out there and we kind of laid an egg. You know, the defense kept us in there, and offensively we just never really got anything going. You know, that's a good defense out there, especially when they play at home. And we knew that going in, you know, we had a lot of confidence, obviously, from, you know, earlier before the bye playing the Giants. And for whatever reason, we just went out there and just didn't play well. You know, they got after us, and we had a couple turnovers and, you know, some plays there at the end when the game was close and we still had a chance. You know, the ball didn't go our way. And, you know, but I think that shows a lot about what our team is like, you know, to bounce back from, you know, to bounce back from a game like that when a lot of teams can kind of go into, you know, go into tanks. You know, we've now been able to, you know, kind of string 4 together. And I think that's really been the key around here is no matter how bad things seem or how good things seem, we stay pretty even keel. And I think that's, you know, a testament to the guys that we have and to the job that Coach Rivera does.
You joined the Panthers in the same year that Cam Newton arrived as the first overall pick in the draft. So you've been there every step of the way throughout his NFL career. And we now expect quarterbacks to instantly become great. Sometimes it takes a little while. Where is Cam Newton right now, and how has he improved in your eyes and in your experience since you both arrived in 2011?
You know, what I think happens is guys who come in with such immense physical talent, people automatically just assume that's enough and that they're just going to go out and play and be the best kid on the playground. And in his rookie year, he came in and that was the case. You know, we were rolling. We kind of snuck up on some people offensively and we're putting up big numbers. But what people don't understand is, you know, most quarterbacks, you know, I guess not so much lately, but in the past, you know, those guys would be able to sit on the bench and learn for a couple of years, learn the system, learn the checks, learn, you know, the mental aspect of playing quarterback. And he was thrown right into the fire with a team that only won 2 games and with a lot of expectations. And people thought, you know, all that was going to match, you know, his physical attributes. And I just think that's not fair. And, you know, over the course of the last, you know, especially the last year or so, you know, you can just tell his understanding of the offense, his knowledge, his ability to call checks and get us out of bad plays and do all the stuff that I just think takes some time for all players to learn, let alone the quarterback. And, you know, I think he's made that transition and that he's gone through that growing process probably faster than a lot of guys throughout the league. And I just think when you have the physical attributes he does, people just assume it should come faster. And, you know, now that I think he's playing at a high level mentally to match his physical gifts.
let me change gears on you just slightly. You know, I don't want to get into the whole details of what's going on in Miami, but I look at it from the perspective of the other teams. Is there a concern in your locker room that whatever the end result is with what's going on in Miami, it's going to somehow change the way the locker room is for every NFL team going forward?
Oh, I think that's 100%. I think it's one way or another there's going to be change. It's like anything else. You know, one bad apple can ruin the bunch, and you know, things got a little out of hand apparently there. Obviously, we all don't know the whole story, but it seems at some point somebody wasn't in on the jokes and somebody wasn't in on the fun, and I think that's going to kind of be one of those that ends up being a league-wide, hey, you know, where do you draw the line between rookie hazing and bullying? Well, guess what? We're just going to eliminate it all, and it ruins it for, you know, not ruins it, but it kind of eliminates that from the entire league. I think that's definitely going to be one of the end results of this whole situation. And whether you think that's fair or not fair, it's just kind of the way I agree with you. I think that's going to be one of the pieces to the end game here.
I mean, regardless of where the line is between hazing and bullying and harassment, have you seen in your time in the NFL the benefit of giving a guy a hard time from the standpoint of getting him mentally tough enough to play football at an NFL level?
You know, I think, like you said, I think there is a fine line. I think in this game, the number one most important thing to the majority of players is to earn the respect of your teammates. And without the respect of your teammates, you know, you're not going to last real long. And if you do, you're not going to be real happy. I think, you know, just generally speaking, guys, when you come in as a rookie and you come in as a young player, I think they just want to see, is this guy going to be able to help us now? Do I think we need to you know, verbally abuse him? Of course not, but there gets to a point where, hey, you got to prove your worth to us, and then once you do, you get brought into the group as one of us, and you belong here. Now, at the same time, I think those voicemails and I think the verbal abuse and the derogatory racial slurs, I mean, I don't think even if you accept that as a subculture in your locker room, I just don't think there's any place for it. I think it's a slippery slope, and to say what one guy thinks is a joke, you know, another guy doesn't. And I just think that's the dangerous place to put yourself in. And, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't tread in those waters, but that's just me personally. I think, you know, the other stuff of, hey, you know, you're a rookie, let's go, come in, earn your stripes. I think that's good. I think that's a good quality, you know, a good quality component to building a team. But you can do that in a lot more positive, you know, way than I think some of the details that have come out in this situation.
That's well said, and it's a great perspective. And before I let you go, I have to ask you about your son, TJ. He's been through a lot of health issues. How's he doing now? And he's got to be growing and probably getting into all sorts of things around your house.
He is. I appreciate you asking. He just turned a year. You know, his first year was a little more difficult than most. But, you know, we were very fortunate with the health care that we were able to get here. You know, we're very fortunate. He's been through two open-heart surgeries thus far. He's got one more surgery on the horizon in another probably year and a half, 2 years that we're kind of looking at. But between now and then, he's a relatively normal, healthy baby, and, you know, enjoying all the stuff that his twin sister can do, you know, between learning to walk and crawl and getting into everything and, you know, typical baby stuff. So we've really enjoyed it. We're very thankful and blessed to have gotten to where we are, because unfortunately a lot of the babies born with what he has don't make it to their first birthday. So we're very grateful for that.
Well, and that's great news, and it's good to hear. All the best to you and your family. Good luck going forward, Greg. We hope to talk to you again down the road.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks, Mike.
All right, that's Greg Olsen, Carolina Panthers tight end. Already 7th year in the league. You know, I'm getting old. I remember when he was drafted out of Miami. I'm getting old anyway. So anyway, the show's getting old. Well, no, it's not getting that old, because we got one more segment. We're going to hear from you. You can tell me how old I am. Call us up. 888-237-5269. We'll answer your questions on Twitter. We'll answer your phone calls. Be nice to me. I'm old. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live. Every Friday, right about now, we open up the phone lines. We crack open the Twitter bag. Did you buy your Twitter stock yesterday? I sure did not. My investment strategy consists of burying the money in the backyard, what little of it I have. I bury it right next to all the Twitter questions I've answered over the years. Let's start with at JCoop26. Do you think the Ravens are still in it or officially out of playoff contention this year? Well, nobody's officially out of it in the AFC other than the Jacksonville Jaguars. And they're still not mathematically eliminated. So everybody is still alive, although if the Jaguars make it to the playoffs, I'll do something extremely outlandish. I'll say that I'll do something extremely outlandish, and I'm not going to say what it is because I don't want to ever have to honor that bet. The Ravens, still very much alive. But what needs to happen, and here's the revelation of the day. They need to win some football games, starting this week with the Cincinnati Bengals coming to Baltimore. Look, the Ravens, I thought they'd go to Cleveland and win. The Ravens had won 11 straight against the Browns. The Ravens didn't get it done. If they can't get it done this weekend against the new bullies of the AFC North, I guess we can't use that word anymore, the new best team in the NFC North or the AFC North or either division, if the Ravens can't get it done this week, could be over. But even at 3-7, they could catch fire late. They could make it to the playoffs. I said earlier in the show, last year, Washington was 3-6, and they made it to the playoffs. So the Bengals without Geno Atkins, they've lost several key players on their defense. Geno Atkins' absence hurts more than any others. This is the time for the Ravens to step up. This is the time for Joe Flacco, who says there are no Supermans in the NFL. Well, he gets, or Superman, he gets paid to be one. Joe Flacco, don't make excuses. Time to step up and get it done and earn that $20.1 million. That $20.1 million per year isn't going to last very long. So Ravens, still alive. They just got to prove it. All right, Jake in Indiana, you're on PFT Live.
Hey, I just want to ask, you know, maybe if Jay Cutler's back and the injuries to the Packers and the Lions' tendency to not show up in big games, do you think the Bears can top the NFC North?
You know, I didn't believe it until the Aaron Rodgers injury, but you take the Aaron Rodgers injury, you take the Jay Cutler surprisingly quick return from an injury that was supposed to knock him out for at least a month. Dr. Brandon Marshall, as John Mullen of CSN Chicago referred to him earlier this week on PFT on NBCSN. Dr. Brandon Marshall was right. Jay Cutler misses only one game. He returns for the showdown with the Lions. I picked the Bears to win that one. MDS, who ordinarily hates the Lions, picked the Lions. He's going to be wrong. I'm going to be right. The Bears are going to win. And if I'm right about the Eagles beating the Packers, the Bears will be all alone in first place in the NFC North, and I think they can pull it off. And if Cutler should get injured again, Josh McCown, Luke McCown, Cade McNown, Sid Luckman, whoever it is, comes in, and the Bears could still be okay. So what an accomplishment for Mark Trestman. First year as a head coach, he has the Bears in contention, and I know that it wasn't exactly a team bereft of talent, but still, Trestman comes in, his system is working, the players buy in. There were a lot of questions about him. It's working out so far, and I think the Bears can keep it going. I picked the Lions to make it to the NFC title game, but then again, I picked the Packers to make it to the Super Bowl, and if they can't win without Aaron Rodgers, they're not even going to make it to the playoffs. Back to the Twitter stack at MattD213. Is Andre Brown coming back enough to get the G-men into the playoffs? What can we expect from Mr. Brown? I don't know what to expect from Mr. Brown because he's been out for so long. He had that broken leg. He's had a couple of broken legs. And when a guy who plays that position, when you're a running back, you are the equivalent of a giant magnet in an anvil factory. I don't know if that's – I've probably used that one before. I don't know. Maybe it's time to retire that one. For a lot of these running backs, it's time to retire if you can't stay healthy. And if you can't take these big hits and continue to play, if you have bones that are going to break and ligaments that are going to snap and muscles that are going to tear, your body isn't physically suited to the position, and that could be the situation with Andre Brown. So maybe it's Peyton Hillis. But look, I think the key for the Giants, they get either pass rush back, and their offensive line needs to play better so Eli Manning can do what he does. I'm not worried about the running game. That is a complement to the passing game, which is an equal element with the ability to rush the opposing passer. If the Giants can get back to doing that, they can get back in contention. They can win that division. The thing that hurt the Giants is that last weekend, while they were off, each of the other three teams in the division won. Good news for the Giants, Washington lost last night. If the Giants can win, they'll be tied with Washington for third place in the NFC East. Another question. Twitter page, at DA92058. Why does RG3 get so much overhype when Luck, Wilson, Camp are all doing much better? Well, the hype, I think, is more local. RG3 became the face of that franchise instantaneously, even before he was drafted. When Washington pulled off the trade to move from number 6 to number 2 and gave up 3 first-round picks and a second-round pick to get in position to pick either Andrew Luck or RG3, everybody knew it was going to be RG3. The hype began then. The hype continued, and last year, early in the season, RG3 looks great. Team falls to 3-6, turns it around, and everybody's all about RG3, and this year has been the obsession with the knee, and is he better? Is he 100%? Look, I would take Luck and Wilson and Kaepernick before I take RG3. Long term, not just now, long term, because RG3 in my mind is in that category of Mike Vick, Jay Cutler. He's eventually going to get hurt. He's not going to stay healthy all season. I want a franchise quarterback that I can rely upon to stay healthy every season. That when he's injured, it's an aberration. It's a freak thing. It's not, oh, well, this is the time in the year that we're going to have to go with our backup quarterback. So give me Andrew Luck and Russell Wilson. I'm not sure which of the two. Give me Colin Kaepernick. I'd have to make a list. How far down my list would RG3 be? He may not be in the top 10 because I'm not convinced the guy is going to be a franchise quarterback, and I'm not convinced he can stay healthy, and that is one of the key elements. Durability, that's one of the key ingredients, and RG3 has yet to prove that he has it. Back to the phone line. John in Portland has it. He has a question. Here he is. John, what's up, buddy?
Hey, Mike. It's great to talk to you again. Every single week you do a coaching hot seat, so I want to know, besides Lovie Smith, who you've talked about a lot, who are your top coaches to fill the vacancies during the offseason? I really like Shaw from Stanford, so anybody else? And also, I disagree with you about the Vikings. I think that they should definitely try and win as hard as they can the rest of the way, because they're one of 5 2-win teams, and they probably are going to have one of the toughest or the highest strength of schedule. So if any of those other 5-win teams lose out, they're going to be at least probably the fourth or higher pick, because they also have the 0-win Jaguars and the 0-win Bucks, and pretty much all of them are going to want a quarterback. And the best way to get a team good is to find a franchise quarterback, but you're not going to get a guaranteed or more or less Luck type quarterback or RG3 type quarterback unless you have like the top pick, and a young quarterback needs a good team to succeed. And they should just draft the best player available, in my opinion.
Well, I appreciate that. The question is, who is the best player? And really, wherever the Vikings are in the top 10, it's safe to say they'll be in the top 10. There isn't a clear-cut Andrew Luck this year. There isn't a clear-cut Cam Newton this year. Maybe the Vikings get lucky. Maybe the Jaguars screw it up with the quarterback they pick. Maybe any teams picking in front of Minnesota looking for a quarterback screw it up, and maybe the Vikings get lucky, unlike 2011, where by all appearances they screwed it up when they took Christian Ponder. To answer your question, though, about coaching candidates, I agree with you. David Shaw is going to be in demand. Kevin Sumlin from Texas A&M will be in demand. College coaches who aren't my way or the highway type guys will be in demand, because we've seen success from guys like Pete Carroll, and the jury's still out on Chip Kelly, but David Shaw, Kevin Sumlin, the NFL's already been knocking on the door. This could be the year that they walk through it. I think John Gruden is going to be a candidate. I think if the Cowboys fire Jason Garrett, it just makes sense for John Gruden to walk right in. He's got a franchise quarterback there in Tony Romo. But the land rush should be for Lovie Smith. They should be after Lovie Smith. Then they'll be the perfunctory offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator from the hot teams. But, you know, that I don't know that that model ever really works all that well. I think the NFL now wants guys with head coaching experience. When you look at what Andy Reid did and has done so far in Kansas City after 14 years head coach of the Eagles, that makes the members of the Fired Football Coaches Association more attractive than they've been in past years. So watch the former NFL head coaches. Those guys may get more run in 2014 because of what Andy Reid has done in 2013. Back to the Twitter bag at Chris Margotti. What are the Jets' chances of making the playoffs? Well, I don't know. 42%? 37.5%? They're 5-4 right now. If the season would end today with some teams playing more games than other teams, which kind of makes it even more absurd, the Jets would have that 6th seed, but they played an extra game ahead of the 3, 4, and 4 teams who all will play their 9th game this weekend. I think the Jets have far more of a chance than anyone thought they'd have, including yours truly. I thought it was going to be a disaster this year for the Jets. And I remember when the schedule came out, somebody said, look at it game by game, week by week. There are games here that the Jets can win. So far, they've won more than they've lost. Now they've got to break this win one, lose one, win one, lose one and, you know, lose to the bye week, as Rex Ryan said they would, and come back and win next week. But I think the Jets have a far better chance than we ever would have envisioned. And it can make things very interesting, because by the time Geno Smith gets to the playoffs, if he gets there, he's no longer a rookie. He's got 16 games under his belt. Maybe the Jets can surprise some people. But we need to see some more consistency, or it would be just a one-week surprise, and then they'd lose the following week if they manage to win in the wild card round. And that's it. We will be back on Monday. I'll be in Stamford, Connecticut. We'll be talking all about the things that happen on the field in Week 10 and the things that happen off the field. In other words, the latest in the Jonathan Martin saga. I have a feeling that even with a full slate of Sunday games, we're still going to be talking about the Dolphins situation come Monday. I've just got that feeling this isn't going away anytime soon. We'll have all the latest on that come Monday. We'll have the latest, if there is any, and there probably will be, tonight at 5:30 Eastern Time on PFT on NBCSN. Eric Casilius, Peter King in the studio. I'll be right here, and we'll be getting you ready for the Week 10 action. Also, we'll be with you all weekend long, around the clock. We have like 90 posts on Sunday as we try to keep you up to date with the games. Only a handful of teams on byes this week, so plenty going on. Check us out all weekend. Here's a quick look at the highlights of the week that was. We'll see you back here Monday. Have a great weekend.
It was several minutes of us up there with a large unknown. Nobody in the stands left their seats. Everybody standing. You could hear a pin drop from when the place was just absolutely, absolutely rocking.
Well, you mentioned critical mass. It's critical mess is what it is, Mike. And the up-to-date information, it hasn't changed from yesterday. The investigation, or review, as the Dolphins prefer to call it, by the NFL has officially begun.
I think the big picture here is that, you know, last night you saw one team that was prepared at quarterback. They had that contingency plan a long time ago with Josh McCown. The Packers never really had that.
You know, they were kind of all saying the same thing, and their support of Richie Incognito was, all, you know, to me, was bordering on 100%, and it was very much, not so much anti-Jonathan Martin, it was more puzzlement at Jonathan Martin, at where is this coming from, and why is he doing this?
But I think, with us disagreeing on six, I'm pretty confident that I'll go at least maybe 4-2 and build my margin just a little bit more. I'm feeling pretty good about where we stand in our head-to-head contest.
You know, I finally feel like we've started to put it all together. I think at times, you know, both earlier this year and in the past, you know, either different parts of our offense would play well or different aspects of the game would go well. You know, offense would play well, defense wouldn't. Defense, most of the time the defenses would play awesome and the offense kind of let us down. So I think, you know, we've put it all together